fluent in a foreign language by only reading books on vocabulary and grammar. You need to tolerate awkwardness and discomfort and practice speaking the new language. In exactly the same way, you will learn best how to overcome unwanted intrusive thoughts by intentionally provoking them and coping with them while your brain and body are reacting. Worried voice. Oh no, I can't imagine I'll be able to intentionally think my awful thoughts. What if it makes me sick? Or makes me worse? Or what if I can't handle it and lose control? False comfort. Come on, I'll help you. We'll make sure you are okay and don't do anything that sends you over the edge. Worried voice. Over the edge? Oh no, do you think I might lose my mind doing this exposure stuff? How will you make sure I don't go over the edge? False comfort. No, I think you will be fine, but all your worrying is starting to get to me. Why don't you just think about something else? Worried voice. How can I think about something else when I'm supposed to think the thought? Do you think I might actually do what goes through my mind? That would be terrible. Wise mind. Both of you would do better by getting closer to the present. Do yourself a favor and listen to yourselves. Do either of you think you are helpful? We are being offered a path that has been helpful to others and seems like it might be helpful to us. I am willing to try something new, as the old ways surely do not work. I would like to try it, and I hope you too can figure out a way to go along as well. You are just going to need a little faith. If the content of each intrusive thought is meaningless, you might be wondering why we ask you to think those particular thoughts. It is because your attitude and sensitivity toward these thoughts are what you are aiming to change. There is no better way to do that than to face precisely the worst thoughts you can come up with. If you avoid the thoughts that trigger you the most, you give them even more power. If you compromise and invoke anything less than the real thing, you are forgetting that thoughts, any thoughts, are just thoughts. Changing your brain. How extinction works. There are two ways to explain how your brain learns to become less fearful as a result of exposure. One is called emotional processing, and the other is called inhibitory learning. Both theories are supported by brain research, so we are going to give you a short explanation of both. Emotional processing explained. Emotional processing theory states that your brain develops false, fearful memory structures that keep your fears alive. When you consistently avoid or run away from thoughts that trigger these memory structures, you never learn that they are incorrect and that your thought isn't really dangerous. As a result of keeping away from the triggers, they remain part of your brain for very long periods of time. You don't have the chance to habituate or get used to the thought because your false brain structures tell you they are dangerous and you should keep away. This theory explains why actively inviting those thoughts along with the anxiety creates corrective emotional processing, so fearful memory structures in your brain become accurate. Real experience allows false fear memories to be emotionally processed, and your fear will then be erased. But there are two important requirements. The first is that corrective emotional processing only occurs in the presence of fear, since the fear is what allows the memory structures in the brain to change. The technical term is exposure plus activation. Any exposure that activates anxiety brings the false fear structures into play, and they change as a result of seeing that nothing dangerous, as opposed to frightening, really happens. The second requirement is that you keep in contact with your triggering thoughts until your anxiety goes away or at least calms down considerably. This allows your brain to get used to the thought and habituate to it. You get maximum therapeutic benefits from exposures that are long enough for this to happen. Emotional processing theory makes it very clear why avoiding the thought won't work. Avoidance keeps you experiencing the thought as dangerous or intolerable, and that sets the stage to re-trigger your amygdala. Worried voice plays the part of the false but powerful fear structures in your brain, but the voice of false comfort is the voice that represents avoidance and distraction, and both of those interfere with emotional processing. Inhibitory learning explained. Another more recent model explains the therapeutic benefits of exposure in a slightly different way. The inhibitory learning model of exposure says that people don't really unlearn old, fearful responses. Instead, what happens is that new pathways are created in the brain that compete with the old, fearful response. The more new pathways that are created, the greater the chance that a non-fearful path will be chosen. If you practice it enough, you create many non-fearful responses that inhibit the scary one. A non-fearful response then becomes the default response, and you are no longer afraid. Imagine that your fearful response is the main road going through your town. And imagine that a planned highway is the new reaction. If a highway is built right next to the road, the highway will become used more and more until the road is barely used. The road still exists, but it handles less and less traffic as people get used to the convenience of the highway. Exposure work creates the new highway. Inhibitory learning is new learning. Even if you don't entirely habituate to, become completely okay with, whatever you are trying to get used to, your new pathways are being formed. You do best when you practice frequently, in many different situations, under a variety of conditions. If we go back to the model of the highway, frequent and varied practice helps to create more on and off ramps for the highway. It will be easier to get on and off, and you will use it more frequently. This way of looking at exposure also explains a distressing phenomenon that you have surely experienced. Sometimes, for no apparent reason, something that has stopped upsetting you some time ago can occasionally trigger a bolt of anxiety. Now we know that the fearful path is still there, but is hardly ever used. So you have to be prepared for anxiety to occasionally show up. It is actually more likely to happen when your mind is stickier, such as when you are fatigued or stressed about something else. What it means is that you are temporarily stickier, not that the learning you have already done is lost. What is most important about exposure is that you stay in contact with what frightens you until the feelings seem more manageable. They don't have to go away, but you should stay long enough so that they seem a little more tolerable. You might say that your description of the fearful feelings goes from "they are so uncomfortable that I find them intolerable" to "they are uncomfortable but tolerable." The goal is to feel that you can tolerate the anxiety better, as opposed to eliminating it completely. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that being able and willing to tolerate anxiety, as opposed to eliminating anxiety, actually results in more durable and long-term recovery. In other words, it is your inability to tolerate your unwanted intrusive thoughts that keeps them going. That inability keeps your brain using the old, fear-provoking pathways and prevents new ones from being created. If unwanted intrusive thoughts just don't matter because you have less fear of them and you are able to tolerate them much better, then they fade out on their own. New, non-fearful pathways in your brain are utilized and strengthened. Both theories have one very important aspect in common. The ingredient for getting over your fears is, paradoxical as it might seem, allowing yourself to experience them. Planned practice versus incidental practice. In Chapter 7, How to Handle Thoughts When They Happen, we presented detailed steps to make the most of each unwanted intrusive thought as it occurred. That is incidental practice, making the most of an intrusion that seems to come out of the blue. It is practice you get to do when thoughts happen. But you can speed your recovery by deliberately increasing the opportunities to create new brain pathways. Planned practice occurs when you intentionally expose yourself to your triggers, or intentionally have the unwanted intrusive thoughts that set off your fear alarm system. Your goal is to focus on what is happening inside you so you can practice reacting to the false alarms in new and more helpful ways, so you can teach your brain. For the time that you are actually engaged in planned practice, you want to be anxious. Experiencing anxiety helps you practice engaging the paradoxical attitude of acceptance while your brain and body are yelling, "Danger! Get away from here! Avoid!" This is a hard task, and it requires willingness to be uncomfortable. You are willingly allowing yourself to stay where you want to avoid, allowing uncertainty to remain when your inner voices are begging for certainty and intentionally allowing the feeling that seems so dangerous. We are asking you to react without urgency as your worried voice is screaming at you to do something. We are asking you to outbluff anxiety, to refuse to be hijacked, and to stand up to the bullies in your mind. Once again, consider the alternative: to continue the enormous avoidance efforts you have already expended and continue to expend that don't actually provide help and just maintain your suffering. 5 A's for optimal practice. You will get the most out of planned practice if you can keep certain principles in mind as you grapple with unwanted intrusive thoughts. Remember that anxiety will be working hard to trick you into believing that your thoughts really do represent all the upsetting myths that we debunked in Chapter 3. What thoughts mean, myths and facts. In fact, this might be an excellent time to review that chapter, since your worried voice might very well be repeating every one of those myths. Here are the 5 A's, which we will explain in more detail. 1. Attitude of acceptance. 2. Assign accurate assessment. 3. Active allowance of awareness and effect. 4. Avoid avoidances. Always attempt approach. 5. Action. Advance activities anyway. Attitude of acceptance. In Chapter 7, we explained how to apply the attitude of acceptance to each unwanted intrusive thought as it pops up. Now we are asking you to expand that attitude toward your planned exposure practice. Remember that acceptance is the opposite of fighting with the feeling or fleeing from the thought, and it is part of the paradoxical nature of anxiety that accepting the feelings and thoughts is the most efficient way to get rid of them. Assign accurate assessment. Remember that you are practicing with unwanted intrusive thoughts. They are thoughts, just thoughts and only thoughts. They might feel different from many of your other thoughts, but that doesn't change the fact that they are only thoughts. Despite the commentary that anxiety is feeding you, intrusive thoughts are not impulses, indications of your character, nor messages from your inner self that something awful happened or is about to happen. Helpful fact: anxiety tries to convince you that intrusive thoughts have a special meaning. Part of beating anxious thinking is refusing to be taken in by this misleading message. Your job is to stay with the label, "That is an unwanted intrusive thought and not an issue," and trust your assessment, despite the doubts and what-ifs that are sure to surface. Remember that your amygdala has sounded its false alarm, and so the thoughts feel different. They feel dangerous. Remember that feelings aren't facts, and that anxiety's role is to trick you into running away from the thoughts and pushing away the feelings. You know this is an intrusive thought by the way it feels and the way it acts. It feels awful and contains an urgent sense to get rid of it. And it acts like a bad penny. It shows up again and again. Active allowance of awareness and affect. While you are practicing exposure to unwanted intrusive thoughts, your goal is to allow all thoughts and feelings into awareness. The word affect is the term that psychologists use to describe emotions. This is the ultimate goal that you are aiming for, but it's not something that you should expect to obtain right away. So don't get upset at yourself when, not if, you fall short. Keep in mind that the more of your emotions and thoughts you can keep in awareness, the more effective your exposure will be in producing habituation and inhibitory learning. Actively allowing awareness makes your planned practice work better and will help you avoid some of the pitfalls that anxiety brings. Worried voice: I'll never be able to allow awareness. All the bad things that can happen fill up my mind. I'm a failure. False comfort: I know you can try harder. Just a little more discipline and less mollycoddling will do it. Worried voice: but I try as hard as I can. I can't do it any better. I can't stand it. Wise mind: we can be both disciplined and gentle with ourselves. Our job is to allow awareness of all we can, and also to gently, tenderly, and kindly bring ourselves back to the task when we become distracted. Our mind naturally wanders off. That is okay. Discipline and gentleness. That's the most productive approach. Avoid avoidances. Always attempt approach. Optimal practice embraces the principle that anxiety is maintained by avoidance, and overcoming anxiety means moving to areas of greater discomfort. Avoiding avoidances is the principle that describes this approach. Remember that the purpose of planned practice is to generate anxiety by doing what is required to trigger your amygdala. The amygdala only learns not to be afraid when the fear pathways are activated. Repeated clanging of the alarm response sets the stage for emotional processing, inhibitory learning, and for your brain to rewire itself so the thought no longer sounds the alarm. Avoidance blocks learning. Always attempting to approach the trigger will give you an overall direction to head when you are in the midst of practicing. If you are in the midst of a planned practice and you aren't sure whether you should stay with the thought or distract yourself in some way, the always attempt approach will guide you towards staying with the thought and discourage you from looking for a distraction. If, during a planned practice, you have the thought that this will interfere with your work later and so you should cut it short, this principle will encourage you to stay with the task and not avoid it because of some future concern. Avoidances can be both behavioral as well as mental. If you cancel a lunch with a woman who often triggers unwanted intrusive thoughts that you might be gay, or you miss church services because of the fearful thought that you might yell out blasphemy, those are behavioral avoidances. And avoidance can be much subtler than that. You might go to church and insist on sitting in the last row so you can quickly and easily leave the church just in case the thoughts start up. Or you might go to lunch with the woman but talk incessantly and barely look at her. That is a form of avoidance as well. Additionally, avoidances can be purely mental. Avoidances occur when false comfort tries to quiet worried voice. In these cases, you are trying to avoid the anxious feeling with internal dialogue. But, as you know, false comfort is always followed by another round of worried voice. In general, all avoidances reinforce and empower your unwanted intrusive thoughts. It is the exact opposite of what we want. We want your intrusions to become less powerful and you to be less and less susceptible to their messages. Action. Advance activities anyway. This principle reminds you to return to your task at hand after your planned practice session, as well as after each intrusive thought that seems to come out of the blue. Remember that your goal is to achieve a new way to relate to your thoughts that is unentangled and free of struggle. When you deliberately invite these thoughts, you do not give them the power to waylay your life. One way to achieve this is to continue doing the things you were doing prior to the thoughts. As we have mentioned in the previous chapter, unwanted intrusive thoughts can be compared to internal bullies. The most effective anti-bully activity is to refuse to let them change your daily activities. If you don't, then you are giving power to the bully's message. You can expect to feel afraid. There's your amygdala again. But your most therapeutic reaction is to continue with your life and ignore the apparent message. The nitty-gritty of planned practice. Now we are going to explain some of the specific ways that you can practice on your own that will encourage the most therapeutic benefits of exposure. This might be a good time to review the 6 steps explained in the previous chapter. Go at your own pace. The overarching rule is that self-directed exposure work must feel manageable. You will make the most progress if you allow yourself permission to go at your own pace. Manageable does not mean comfortable, since little anxiety reduction is learned by a comfortable brain. There is no set speed limit for how fast and how intensely you should work. There is no magic level of anxiety that is optimal. What feels manageable one day might feel much too difficult, or perhaps too easy the next. The general principle is that you should strive to work at a level that feels manageable, but is still a stretch or a challenge. This may vary from day to day, as your level of sensitization or the stickiness of your mind goes up and down. In general, the faster the pace, the more rapid the learning. But if you go so fast that you can't apply the 5 A's, then you might be just sounding the alarm and not learning anything helpful. Think the thought, the worst thought, but with a twist. Since the thought frightens or disgusts you, one of the best ways to practice is to invite the thought to enter your awareness in a slightly altered way. Stay connected to the thought while accepting and allowing the feeling to remain. Here are some ways that you can practice having your most uncomfortable thoughts with a bit of a change. And remember, humor is your best ally during practice. Sing the thought to the tune of Happy Birthday or Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. Write the thought over and over. Make a poem of the thought. Songify the thought. The app is free. Draw or paint the thought. Record the thought and play it back. Elaborate the thought into a full script with a terrible ending. Read it over and over. Write the thought on sticky notes and paste them all over the house, the mirror, the fridge, your purse. Translate the thought into another language. Say the words backward. Carry the written thought around in your pocket or tucked inside your clothing. Stand in front of a mirror and speak the thought out loud, over and over. Try to make the thought even worse, to the point of absurdity. Add the phrase, "I am having the thought that," to the thought, or "I am seeing the image of," to the image, and repeat it on each step as you go up and down the stairs in your home, or anytime you encounter stairs. Helpful fact. Humor goes a long way to making practice more manageable. Let us listen in on a dialogue. Worried voice. Are you serious? Deliberately making myself anxious when I'm not? I suffer enough. False comfort. Wise mind says this is the best way to feel better. It's like having to hurt a bit to get an injection, but the medication is worth it. We will likely be more anxious at first, and that is how change happens. Our brain needs to be activated to learn a new way. It should be okay. Worried voice. But what if it isn't? What if I just make myself worse? False comfort. We can always fall back on the old ways, like gritting our teeth and holding our breath and avoiding stuff, even though it doesn't really work. Wise mind. This kind of work demands a leap of faith. Many others have taken this leap. Actually, being willing to take the risk is exactly the attitude that makes this whole thing effective. It is the willingness that is the key. The unwanted intrusive thought that is wanted and deliberately sought becomes a passing thought of no consequence. Avoid getting caught up in content. There are some phrases that you can say to yourself as a way of helping you disentangle from the content of your intrusive thought. Here is a list that others have found helpful. You might think of some others as well. That's a thought. Yes, damned if I can't know that. Any thought can be tolerated, even that one. Nothing is certain, so I will get used to it. I can think of something worse. Change what if to what is. Move from thinking to sensing. For example, instead of responding to a what if question, pivot your attention gently over to your senses. What can you hear, see, smell right now, here in the moment? What does your body feel like? Notice without judgment or struggle. Examples of planned practice. It is sometimes hard to get the flavor of planned practicing by describing each element separately. For that reason, we present 3 separate scenarios involving planned practice in real life. My son was in a car accident. A young mother was plagued by unwanted intrusive thoughts and images that her son had been in a car accident. She was texting him many times a day to reassure herself that her thoughts were not omens or predictions, or that somehow they were the product of a mother's intuition. After education about intrusive thoughts, what they mean and don't mean, and an understanding that her efforts to avoid the thoughts were what was keeping them going, she agreed to begin planned practice. She was instructed to sing a new song, "Johnny is Dead by the Side of the Road," to the tune of Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, over and over, and to imagine a picture of him crumpled outside a crushed car at the same time. She was to do this not just when she had the urge to text him, but when she was showering, cooking, making the beds, vacuuming, shopping, eating, and every time she picked up a phone, computer, or other electronic device. At first, this was very difficult for her, but surprisingly quickly, it was boring, and shortly thereafter, it felt absurd to be upset by the song. She had defeated the thoughts by deliberately inviting them to bother her. What if I kill myself? I don't want to die. A middle-aged man who lived alone kept having the profoundly disturbing and, to him, absurd thought that he might hang himself against his own wishes. This began after a celebrity had in fact done so, stunning and upsetting everyone. After sufficient psychoeducation, he was encouraged to carry around a rope so he would not forget to practice having the thought, "I could hang myself in a moment of impulse," many times a day. He also placed a rope in his car and in his bathroom, hanging from the shower rod. When he noticed his own false comfort voice trying to reassure him with, "But you are a happy man, you would never do that," he was instructed to add, "Nothing is impossible," and then to be willing to have the disturbing thought again on purpose. After a while, the ropes no longer made him upset. I might oversleep. A woman kept herself awake for hours every night, trying to respond to the unwanted intrusive thought, "I have to make sure my alarm clock is set properly." She would alternate between actually checking the clock and dealing with the returning thought that she had not set it properly. Usually, she could refrain from more clock checking, but not from more memory checking. She would carefully think back over her memory, checking it to make sure she clearly remembered doing it. She lay for hours trying to check her memories, reassuring herself and berating herself for the absurdity of the situation. She was instructed to tell herself, "I invite the thought that I may not have set the alarm properly." She began to sing the thought, including the elaborated story that she might be late for work, to lullaby and good night. She was not to attempt to fall asleep, but just lie in bed resting and allowing the unwanted thought. She got bored. She fell asleep after 20 minutes of planned practice. The struggle was over. It came back as a kind of jolt as she lay in bed, particularly when she was stressed by a work or family issue, but she knew not to fight the thought or try to make it go away, and it became a familiar passing thought on her way to sleep. Eventually, you will discover that the thoughts you invite in, with acceptance, deliberateness, and willingness, change how they feel and how they act. They lose their power to frighten you, disgust you, upset you, or even deter you from doing whatever you wish. They lose their illusion of being meaningful and important. You feel more free. When you do these planned exposures, you are disentangling from them and disempowering them with your attitude of acceptance. The more you practice, the faster this happens. You take back control by refusing to control, and you regain composure and self-respect by allowing the natural course of your mind to proceed. You deprive the thoughts of the fuel of paradoxical effort, and they dwindle in importance and, eventually, in strength. Recovery occurs when it no longer matters whether the thoughts happen or not. In this chapter, we have discussed the most potent way to get over unwanted intrusive thoughts so they no longer cause you distress. In the next chapter, we address the best way to think about recovery, what it is, and how to maintain it. Chapter 9. What does recovery mean? In this chapter, we address recovery, what recovery is, and how it is maintained. You may notice we are not using the word cure, which implies you had symptoms of an illness, and now the illness is gone. We do this for a specific reason. Unlike with an illness, the absence of symptoms is not a sufficient definition of recovery. Relief from the struggle of unwanted intrusive thoughts is certainly part of our achievable goals for you, but we are actually suggesting something even more ambitious. We want you to do more than simply have the thoughts stop bothering you. We are aiming for an inoculation for the future as well. So when intrusive thoughts occur once again, and you will remember we all have them, and everyone can expect to experience them from time to time, you will be able to handle them so they do not cause a problem, do not get sticky and repetitive, and do not start that familiar internal dialogue that makes them frightening, disgusting, or shameful. You have certainly come a long way in your recovery, and we congratulate you. You have learned a lot about what thoughts mean and what they don't mean, and you have done a lot of practice to change your automatic reactions to your unwanted intrusive thoughts. Let's review what you will carry forward from here. There are three aspects of this inoculation that we have been addressing throughout this book. The first is a knowledge of how thoughts affect feelings, and the understanding that your thoughts, and in fact, any thoughts, have the capacity to automatically trigger your alarm system. The second is enhancing your ability to slow down so you are able to better observe the flow of thoughts. And the third is gaining a gentler, non-judgmental, and more accepting relationship with your mind. The result is that you are able to accept and allow all your thoughts, along with the automatic feelings that come with them. When you started this book, if you had heard that our goal was to change your relationship to your thoughts, you might have had an objection that went something like this. Worried voice. I don't just want to change my relationship with those awful thoughts. I want them to go away and never come back. False comfort. These people must know what they're doing. They seem to be saying that we have to accept that we will be tortured and that we will learn how to deal with it. Worried voice. That's a raw deal. False comfort. Maybe hypnosis would work. But you are at a point now where you can also access your wise mind. This is the part of you that has learned that accepting and allowing these thoughts is the path toward training your brain to stop fighting them. You have practiced a change of attitude when unwanted thoughts showed up, and you have deliberately invoked these thoughts in order to practice this wise mind response. Wise mind. No, hang in there, guys. Here is the actual deal. If the thoughts really don't matter to us, they actually stop coming, because we have stopped fueling them with our disgust, fear, anger, and shame. The path to the other side of the storm, where all is calm, is through it. We can't outrun it or circle around it, but if we walk forward through it, it does not take long to pass. We have the same goal, to not be bombarded by intrusive thoughts we don't want. We say that wise mind is right, and here's why. You were sensitized to the thoughts, and so you dreaded them, braced for them, and worried about their recurrence. You avoided situations that might trigger them. We call this anticipatory anxiety. You can think of it as the what if about the what if. Anticipatory anxiety causes you to project into the future in an attempt to prepare yourself for the next unwanted intrusive thought. You hope they do not come, and you are upset when they do. You are involved in a struggle with your mind. The result is that you keep oriented toward the future, pay very little attention to the present, and keep your body and mind sensitized. You remain vigilant, with your body poised to react. It keeps worried voice and false comfort in constant conversation. It promotes stickiness in your mind. But most importantly, it keeps the unwanted intrusive thoughts coming. Defending against thoughts brings them to the foreground. Your brain automatically recreates them and continues the cycle. Starting the cycle of recovery. You are now starting to experience intrusive thoughts in a new way. Your beliefs about them are totally different. You think that they are silly, unavoidable blips of your mind, holding no meaning, warning, or power. Pretty soon, it becomes boring and unnecessary to be on alert for them. It would be like waiting with bated breath for something ordinary and expected to happen, like waiting for paint to dry or for a clock to tick the next tick. You would naturally turn your attention to more interesting things, like whatever else you are thinking about or doing. Ordinary things like work, fun, or lunch. You could pay attention to other, more interesting thoughts and feelings. You would be free to experience the world around you. This lowers overall sensitization, tension, and arousal. This happens quite naturally, without effort or intention. It is not a technique. It just feels normal as this happens. Your mind simply becomes less sticky. Intrusive thoughts stop having a whoosh attached to them. They may still have the same content, but they feel different. And then they become passing thoughts. They come and go easily. Your worry about them reduces. Your sensitization goes down. The cycle continues. And then they just peter out on their own, without any help from you. This is the fear-reducing cycle we presented in Chapter 5. It ends disturbing, stuck, unwanted, intrusive thoughts. They are only passing thoughts. Worried voice. I have tried and tried to accept, and then when I check to see if it is working, the thoughts just keep coming back and bothering me. Acceptance just doesn't work for me. Wise mind. It is tricky. Acceptance is an attitude for allowing the thoughts and not a technique for stopping them. If you are checking to see if it is working, then you don't actually have the attitude. It is like you have the words but not the music. Acceptance is when you actually don't care whether the thoughts are there or not, because they are not important or worthy of attention, and because they do not matter. This attitude is what starts the cycle of recovery, reducing anticipatory anxiety, reducing the need for any kind of avoidance, and cultivating the basic okayness with your own mind. This down-regulating results in less stickiness and starts happening on its own once paradoxical effort and entanglement have stopped. Worried voice, but how do I make it happen? Wise mind, it is not something you do actively. It is passive, like falling asleep or allowing an ant to crawl down your arm without doing anything at all. It involves trusting the process, trusting that there is no hurry, trusting that there is no need for action, trusting when there is uncertainty, and trusting me, the wise part of you. Stickiness takes some time to go away because it is biologically based and bodies and brains need some adapting time. Sometimes the cycle of recovery takes longer than you wish, but it will happen as you continue to have the attitude that the thoughts do not really matter and there is no need to be on the alert for them. So patiently letting time pass while your body and brain heal themselves is part of the cycle of recovery. Setback. We like to use the term setback instead of relapse for the return of unwanted intrusive thoughts. That is because unwanted intrusive thoughts pretty much always return at some point, and we want you to expect them and greet them as a chance to practice accepting them with the right therapeutic attitude. When you know that intrusive thoughts are likely to return, you are less likely to fall back on old ways of reacting. This can include shock, annoyance, and anger, which then escalate the problem. Part of your job is to remember that thoughts can return at any time, from weeks to years or even decades after they have petered out. But unless you lead an utterly charmed life with no stress, conflict, nights of poor sleep, and no excitement, change, or boredom, there will be a time when the brain just becomes temporarily sticky and old pathways in the brain circuitry are accidentally reactivated. Setback can happen with meaningless stress, like too much caffeine, a cold virus, or bad news from the dentist. Or it can happen when you are dealing with something in your life that is an ongoing issue, like a conflict at work. It may even happen at good times, like if you finally get to have a vacation. You are sitting on the beach, perfectly relaxed, and an intrusive thought surprises you. You get mad at it. Not now. While worried voice and false comfort start up their dialogue again after months of absence. If you do not expect this, then the natural responses to the unwelcome return of thoughts are 1. Demoralization. Oh no, not this again. 2. Anger. I was sold a bill of goods. Or why me? 3. Fear. I must be really a sick or bad person. Or 4. Hopelessness. That method works for some people, but not for me. It is hopeless for me. If you understand that this temporary return of thoughts tends to happen to everyone in recovery, then it is far easier to greet it as an opportunity to practice the attitudes and anti-avoidance skills that may have become rusty over time. In fact, it is actually helpful for it to happen sooner rather than later. So when you have a return of some unwanted intrusions, you don't have to read the whole book again and can just thumb through some reminders. Sometimes the thoughts that return are exactly the same old thoughts. Sometimes they are a slightly altered version of the same thoughts. Sometimes they have morphed into something completely different in content. But the telltale sign will be there. Remember, it is not the content, but how the thoughts and images act and feel, and your instant desire to push them away or get entangled with them, that marks them as unwanted intrusive thoughts. Worried voice. I used to worry that I could be a pedophile, and I got over it. I was fine for months. But now suddenly I am plagued with the thought that I could have Lou Gehrig's disease. What a horrible way to go. I hate this. False comfort. I know a good neurologist. I'll make an appointment. Worried voice. I already went to one. She said I have no signs. False comfort. Maybe a second opinion would put your mind at ease? Worried voice. She said that I am almost certainly just anxious, but she could give me an MRI. I have been on WebMD, the Mayo Clinic website, and an ALS chat group to see if I should get one. Wise mind. Let me step in here before you embark on a huge medical workup. Do you recognize what is happening here? Is this thought acting and feeling like the pedophilia ones? Does it keep coming back? Are you getting entangled? Do you need to take a step back, slow down, and get this labeled? Worried voice. Oh no, it's back! Wise mind. Do you remember that we were hoping for a chance to practice what we have learned about how to handle unwanted intrusive thoughts? This is the chance. False comfort. I think we should read the book again. Wise mind. Not a bad idea. Everyone forgets the details. So a healthy way to regard setbacks, no matter when they happen, is that they are to be expected and that they are opportunities to practice what you have already learned about approaching the attitude of acceptance. Intrusive thoughts do not have to usher in another period of suffering and struggle. Often, it takes a bit of self-observation and some words from your wise mind to realize that your thoughts are just other examples of unwanted intrusive thoughts not worth exploring or getting entangled with. Here is a question to ask yourself if you notice you are worrying or preoccupied with something unwelcome that keeps intruding, bothering you, and repeating. What would wise mind say? As you know by now, recovery is actually an attitude, a willingness to have whatever thoughts happen to cross your mind for however long they happen to stay and whatever they are about. It is a set of beliefs about thoughts, that thoughts are just thoughts, and that they are not warnings, messages, moral acts, or facts. It is a set of beliefs about your own thoughts, that they are outcroppings of a sticky mind, the opposite of your values and wishes, and not worthy of attention. And it is a way of relating to unwanted intrusive thoughts that is unentangled, non-judgmental, and effortless. These attitudes and beliefs leave you inoculated for the future. And when it no longer matters whether the thoughts happen, they then have no fuel, and they fade away. Congratulations. Congratulations for reading this whole book and for beginning your journey to full recovery. When the intrusion of an unwanted thought no longer activates an internal dialogue, no longer requires effort, action, or avoidance, and just simply does not matter, and when you no longer dread them or even care about them, you are free. If you want more. Finally, if you found this book applies to you and it was helpful, you may be interested in following up this work with additional professional help. The following are some websites with directories of local therapists who are trained to treat unwanted intrusive thoughts, and for whom the ideas and suggestions of this book are familiar. Unfortunately, not just any therapist or person who claims to treat anxiety or unwanted thoughts may be as specialized as you are seeking. Anxiety and Depression Association of America, www.adaa.org. International OCD Foundation, www.iocdf.org. Association for Behavioral and Cognitive Therapies, www.abct.org. Chapter 10. When to seek professional help. So far, we have been talking about intrusive thoughts that are frightening but not at all dangerous. They might be frustrating, humiliating, or even shameful, but they are all events that exist only in your mind. Despite your enormous concerns, you are not likely to do the things you think about. As we mentioned, they are the product of over-control, not lack of control. They actually speak to the opposite of who you are because you fight the thoughts that feel most unlike your nature. They may feel like strange urges, but they are not what you wish or want, even unconsciously. However, there are different kinds of thoughts and preoccupations that keep returning, but have a distinctly different feel to them. If you find yourself continually returning to the types of thoughts presented in the next few paragraphs, it is best that you speak about them with a mental health professional. There are just a few types of these thoughts, but you should know about them. Invited thoughts. Certain fantasies, thoughts, or images of self-destructive behavior can be actual urges to handle feelings or situations that seem intolerable. People sometimes call upon them in times of distress, and they seem soothing or comforting, like escape plans if things get too hard to bear. It is also the case that invited thoughts of revenge or outrage lead to actual plans to do harm to others. Here are some examples. I want to cut myself because it makes me feel better after I do. At least it is visible, and I am in control of my pain. After I cut, I feel calmer or numb, and the mental pain goes away. I can always get drunk if I can't manage. So what? Who cares? If she leaves me, I can always just jump off a building or shoot myself if I can't stand it. Then she will regret it. I deserve to be treated better, so I will let the air out of his tires. Let him wonder who did it and why. It will be my little secret. If she says that one more time, I will hurt her. If thoughts or images become actual plans or actions that are destructive to others or self-harming, they do not qualify as unwanted intrusions, and treatment is recommended. Real suicidal preoccupations. For people who are depressed and struggling, the feelings evoked by the thoughts are not, "This is not me, I love my life, why would I even be thinking that?" But rather, the feeling is a sincere wish to die. In harmless, unwanted, intrusive thoughts, it feels like this. What if in a moment of craziness, I kill myself when I don't really want to? In contrast, in serious depression, it looks something like this. I really deserve to die. Or I actually want to die. This is hopeless. Dying is my only option. My family will be better off without me. They will forgive me, or we'll manage after a while. I can't stand living anymore. I have to do something drastic. Although the thought repeats, the feeling of deserving to be dead is totally different from the fear that you might, despite your conscious intentions, do something harmful to yourself. These thoughts appear in the context of other symptoms of depression or bipolar illness, such as loss of appetite, trouble sleeping, a loss of ability to feel pleasure, irritability, and feelings of worthlessness and hopelessness. The idea of being dead feels comforting or appropriate instead of frightening. Real pedophilia. People who are sexually attracted to and aroused by children are few and far between. Many have their own justifications that support what they are doing. Some resist their fantasies and activities seeking sex with children, either because they know these activities are illegal and do not want to get caught, or because they sincerely believe it to be wrong. However, they find themselves pulled toward risky illegal activities on the internet, with child pornography, or with real children, strangers, or family. The important distinction is to understand that pedophiles are looking for stimulation and arousal. They are seeking a sexual release. On the other hand, people with unwanted intrusive thoughts involving the topic of pedophilia are shamefully and anxiously checking to see if they are perverted against their will, and, at the very same time, fervently hoping to prove that they are not. They are not looking for sexual stimulation. They are looking for reassurance that they are not the sort of person who is attracted to children. If perspective is entirely lost. You might read this book and have no idea what we are saying, or have no understanding of the points we are making. Or perhaps you think it is all nonsense. You might not be able to concentrate enough to think clearly. And this is not just a temporary feeling that lasts for a few minutes, a few hours, or a day or two, but something that seems pretty constant. In that case, reading this book is not going to provide answers. Hopelessness. Sometimes a feeling of hopelessness is perceived as an actual fact. Hopeless feelings can happen, even if the objective facts are that nothing at all is hopeless. In fact, hopeless feelings can happen in conditions that are easily treatable and situations that are easily fixed. The feeling of hopelessness can be sometimes made to seem more real by the struggle against it, as we have discussed in earlier chapters. However, hopeless feelings can lead to the false sense that there are no more options in your life, and so your life is over. This thought can repeat over and over. Here are some examples. I have lost everything. My boyfriend hates me, and I can never get him back. I'm doing so badly in school that I will fail out. Even my friends see me as a loser and don't want to spend time with me. My life is over. There is no point to any of this. I'm just a loser. If you are truly unable to see beyond a feeling of hopelessness, it is time to seek professional help. Agitation. Finally, there are times when racing thoughts can seem like intrusive thoughts. But racing thoughts are actually a symptom of agitation, which is associated with depression, bipolar disorder, or certain medical conditions. Racing thoughts tend to switch from topic to topic. They feel like you can't finish one before the next is there. This agitation almost always goes along with other symptoms, including the inability to feel any pleasure in life, anhedonia, and early morning awakening, waking up with a start in the middle of the night and then not being able to get back to sleep. People experience a significant change of appetites for food, sex, and ordinary daily activities. You might feel irritable, have a great difficulty with concentration, and feel utterly unable to relax. Your sense of humor might change. Because these feelings are so dramatic, agitation is often mistakenly called extreme anxiety. But in fact, it is a sign of depression or related conditions. It needs a different approach, very often medical in nature. It is highly treatable. You may read this chapter and say, "Yes, that is me." And if you do, the best help is from a professional and not just a self-help book. But you may wonder, debate, and worry about whether you fit in any of these categories. And that is normal for anyone suffering from unwanted intrusive thoughts. After all, doubt is the engine that fuels anxiety. In fact, it is likely that you do not fit into any of these categories, but you will still get great benefits from this book. Appendix: A Recipe for Unwanted Intrusive Thoughts. What not to do. It isn't easy to create an unwanted intrusive thought. It takes vigilance, effort, and a relentless desire to think the right thoughts. Amazingly, almost all the energy you pour into making sure your thought doesn't get stuck goes right into ensuring that it happens. What is interesting, however, is that with the right ingredients, anyone can create one. You will notice as you read this recipe that it illustrates all the concepts we have introduced. So let's look closely and see how your best intentions go so wrong. A recipe for creating an unwanted intrusive thought. Time required: varies from less than one day to several weeks. Difficulty: 3 of 5 stars. Effort: 5 of 5 stars. Ingredients: 1 or more myths about thoughts. See Chapter 3. Awareness of the passing intrusive thoughts, which everyone has. Vigilance to make sure you don't have those thoughts. A desire to fight any thought that is at odds with your belief about yourself. 1 amygdala, the alarm part of the brain, which everyone has. Being bluffed by the altered state of awareness called anxious thinking. Willingness to struggle to keep a sticky thought from getting more stuck. A demand for certainty when none is possible. the belief that surrendering the struggle is losing the fight. Attempts to avoid, distract, push away, and argue with your stuck thought. Feeling guilty about having the thought, even after it is over, and then asking others for forgiveness or confirmation of your value and goodness as a person. And finally, reassurance, from yourself or others, that you would never do anything like your thought. Optional additional ingredients. Anxiety. These are starter ingredients. Fatigue, hunger, or a hangover. Family or personal history of anxiety. Directions. Choose one or more myths from Chapter 3. Our personal favorites are the myth that your thoughts are under your control and the myth that your thoughts speak to your character or underlying intentions. When you combine them together, you have a solid basis for creating some unwanted intrusive thoughts. However, any combination of myths can yield an excellent unwanted intrusive thought. The next part is probably the easiest and requires very little effort. Just go about living your life, feeling everyday feelings, and having everyday thoughts. Enjoy this part, because it won't go on for all that long. Here is why. Worried voice. It's not good to have me in the kitchen. I could pick up a knife and stab you. False comfort. You are scaring me, worried voice. Do you want me to lock the drawers and hide the knives? Worried voice. Well, it would make me feel better, but this rolling pin, I could just bash you in the head with it. False comfort. Maybe I should get out of your way. Am I far enough from you? We could just not cook today. Wise mind. What is all this fuss about? Thoughts are thoughts. They are bluffing you. Get on with the recipe. Knives and all. I'm hungry. Soon, in the course of living your life, you will have a passing intrusive thought. We know this will happen because everyone has passing intrusive thoughts. This just happens. It is not under your control. Now is the time to add ingredients. This part is up to you, but don't worry. Anyone using this recipe will be able to produce an unwanted intrusive thought. You have to latch on to this thought. You have to notice it and see if this thought can possibly mean something bad about your character or underlying intentions. We are referring to the two myths mentioned above. Here is where your mental effort and your belief system start to work together. If this passing thought can mean something about you, and if you honestly believe that the content of your thought doesn't fit with your sense of the sort of person you are, then you will begin to wonder and doubt yourself. And you will enter a very uncomfortable zone of uncertainty. Psychologists call this a form of cognitive dissonance, where your thoughts and your feelings seem uncomfortably different. And if that possibility exists, and of course it is impossible to absolutely prove that it doesn't, then you have to make sure that the thought doesn't come back again. Because if it intrudes again, then it reinforces that there is something bad about your character or intentions. And you believe with all your heart that this is not true. So those thoughts better stay away. And it feels as if your job is to make sure that happens. For this next step, the struggle starts in earnest. You are fighting the thoughts, but they continue to return. You are encountering the ironic effect. The more you try to keep these thoughts from your mind, the more they intrude. The more they intrude, the more frustrated and anxious you become. You start to wonder if perhaps you aren't as good a person as you had believed. After all, how could a good person have such a twisted mind? Remember, if you are going to be successful at creating a stuck intrusive thought, you have to react to an ordinary passing thought with distress, alarm, and upset. Otherwise, it will just pass. You will forget it or laugh about it, and the recipe will be ruined. Here are a variety of kitchen hints you may use to ensure that thoughts will become stuck, repetitive, and distressing. Some of them are probably already familiar to you. Try hard to think of an explanation for these thoughts. Use your rational mind to counteract the product of your irrational mind. Think of how much better things would be if only you hadn't done something, gone someplace, watched some TV show, or whatever that seemed to trigger the thought. Imagine how awful you would feel or what terrible things would happen if you actually acted on your intrusive thought. Be stern with yourself as a way to make sure you keep disciplined and don't let the thought creep in. Criticize yourself strongly if they do. Think about how much easier it would be if you could only be certain that you would never act on your awful thought. As you work even harder, you experience the fact that your effort appears to work backward. Your energy seems to give power to the thought, and, in contrast, you begin to feel much less powerful, almost as if there were a strong impulse forcing you to act against your will. Your brain and body are in alarm mode, and you are primed for danger. You can be sure you're in alarm mode by noticing the enormous feeling of whoosh that starts low down in your belly and rushes up to your head. That whoosh is the best indication that you are correctly following directions to this point. If there is no whoosh of distress, pick another passing thought, or work harder at fighting or being appalled by it. You now enter the altered state of awareness that we call anxious thinking. Anxious thinking is what happens to everyone when the alarm system in their brain goes off. Think of it as your adrenaline surge. The part of your brain that triggers this alarm, the amygdala, starts responding with its fight, flight, or freeze response. This reaction has a number of names, including stress reaction and danger reaction. The perceptual changes that are part of anxious thinking contribute to the increasing belief that the intrusive thoughts mean more than ordinary thoughts. They start to feel like impulses that need to be resisted. At this point, your body is in alarm mode, and you are experiencing a range of physical sensations indicating what psychologists call high autonomic arousal. In regular words, it means that your entire nervous system is primed for danger, and you are doing whatever you can to keep yourself safe. You are at a critical point in the recipe, so don't even think of stopping. Imagine that you are making a souffle. There is a point in every souffle recipe when you have to go with your feelings so the souffle doesn't fall, yet doesn't overbake. In a similar manner, it is just as important to the success of this recipe that you go with your feelings, whether they are fear, disgust, shame, or shock, and listen to what your alarm system is telling you. You must allow yourself to believe that the alarm sounded by your amygdala and felt in your body is a true alarm, a message of warning not to be ignored. If you don't, and if you start thinking it might be silly or is overreacting or a false alarm, it will result in a failed attempt. So be sure to take your amygdala seriously. You can now congratulate yourself. Merely by following these simple directions, you have created an unwanted intrusive thought from a completely ordinary passing thought. And, if you want, you are ready to sit down at the table and serve your recipe to others. But wait, there's more. For added touches to ensure that your unwanted intrusive thought won't fade away prior to getting maximum suffering, you can include the following. Feel guilty and ask others for forgiveness. Explain that you are not the type of person who wants to do the things in your intrusion. Ask for reassurance that you would never do something like that. Check with others to determine if you seem weird or odd and whether your behavior caused them discomfort. Condiments might include a few sprigs of shame and a dollop of anger. To ensure misery and distress, repeat this recipe as often as possible. Daily practice is preferable, although some people need to start slow with only the occasional effort and pick up speed and frequency over time. Once you are practiced at this recipe, you eventually find it possible to easily ruin a good day. Merely follow the steps above, which become quite automatic. Now that you know how unwanted intrusive thoughts are created, refer back to Chapter 6 to remind yourself why you feel so frustrated. This has been Overcoming Unwanted Intrusive Thoughts by Sally M. Winston and Martin N. Seif. Narrated by Sen Annis. New Harbinger Publications, 2019.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.